trouble.
Of course he is. What do you want from me? That's what Loki does.
Whoa!
Oh, dang!
And you need the god of mystery. Ooh, that looks cool.
Is that a moon? Loki is unpredictable.
Oh!
Yo, he got... he got decked in the face!
I made a bomb!
I needed to see that. Loki needed a good punch in the face. Oh, good
that
God.
That was amazing. Welcome back to New Rock Stars. The clock is indeed ticking as Loki Episode 1 is mere days away. Jeez. And this latest promo footage gives us a clearer sense of how powerful exactly the TVA agents are compared to the God of Mischief. But what exactly are these agents? Or as we are going to ask this episode at least, what the clock?
What the clock?
We're trying out new things every week, and then we'll ask you guys which one you want.
What the clock, though. I dig it.
I like what the clock. And I'll get my own Wilson impression and other ways on the show. That's not even a good one. I got it.
Yo, your own Wilson impression is pretty good. It's pretty impressive. I gotta say.
I can do it certain sentences, other ones not so much. Hey, this is Inside Marvel. I'm Eric Voss. I'm here with MT. How you feeling, MT?
I'm feeling good. I like a good Loki trailer, TV spot. Whatever. So like this chaos spot is pretty great. I love it.
It's a good one. Yeah. So we're counting down the days to Loki with weekly episodes looking ahead to really all the Marvel Phase 4 titles. And this week, in addition to talking about new things we're hearing about Loki, we're going to talk about Loki's possible crossover with the other big piece of MCU news we got this week, the Eternals.
Yes.
And also this episode, we're going to talk about a quote we got from Loki showrunner Mike Waldron about how he wants to try to connect to other MCU titles. We're also going to talk about Aaron Taylor-Johnson, because that's some big Marvel news if you want to address.
Massive news.
Oh, yeah. So a reminder to check out newrockstarsmerch.com for all of our great merch options. We got shirts like this one. We got hoodies, jackets, water bottles, whatever you need. newrockstarsmerch.com. We got a new Loki design in the works. Hopefully we'll be able to announce it next week. But MT, what's our first question this week?
Well, our first what the clock of the day is, what the clock exactly are the agents of the TVA, and what type of life forms are they?
Yeah, how powerful are these things?
Because they seem pretty powerful, because they decked Loki in the face in that trailer.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, in the Marvel Comics, and you can fact check me on this, NT, the TVA is just mostly depicted as this vast bureaucratic agency whose rules everyone kind of just has to follow. They have a seemingly endless number of chronomonitors, each one for each timeline. They got an infinite army of Minutemen is the name of their cops. They just arrest and detain any violators. They got this hierarchy of judges that decide these cases and enforce them. But I don't know. I don't think you often see these god-level characters waging war against the TVA or like Loki says in this show, to burn this place to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, they mostly are just like, they use the fear of the rule of law to enforce their power as opposed to any kind of physical might or magical ability.
Yeah, there's not really a lot of instances where, like, you know, gods like Loki or anybody really interact with the TVA. The TVA are really, like, this really authoritative authority. Like, the A in the TVA is very strong. So, like, because they exist outside of time and space, it's like, we have, like, a bigger jurisdiction than most other beings that reside inside of the Marvel Universe. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they aren't any particular known species. They're really just like cogs of the universe performing a very specific function just to keep everything running on time and to make sure no rules are broken. So yeah, the power isn't in their bodies. It's really in the agency they serve. But it seems like Marvel Studios is doing something a bit different. In this Loki footage, there is a ton of fighting and conflict and fists swung at each other's faces. Wunmi Mosagu decked Loki.
100%.
Nasty hook there.
Yo, I replayed that like as many times as I could because it's so satisfying. It's so satisfying.
It's great to see. We also see in this trailer Loki getting like ricocheted around the TVA viewing room. We also see other characters like Sofia DiMartino's character, maybe Lady Loki, sparring with TVA guards. And then, they use these staff-like weapons that painfully erase people from existence.
Yes.
Kind of disintegrating them.
Yes. I think could actually be like a miniaturized version of the retcon canon of the TVA, which they use to erase people from timelines. So like, it's so cool to see that visual.
Yeah, it's just now this handheld weapon that's pretty cool. And it's pretty visceral, like his scream.
Yeah.
That scared the shit out of Loki. But what's different in the, I mean, when you're comparing this to the comics have, it's a weird, quirky world where things are just introduced for the stakes of a story. Whereas when you're bringing in the cinematic universe, things all kind of have to cohabitate. You know? So, and Mike Waldron even says, like, the TVA is probably going to connect to other things in future Marvel. So we have to get a sense of what the power balance is when it comes to the TVA. And the fact that they're able to arrest Loki, who is a super powerful sorcerer, he possesses an Infinity Stone when they get him, that tells us that this group must be among the most powerful beings in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah, they gotta.
And it makes me think, MT, that their power might be derived from something beyond, from some kind of cosmic level. Like, they're telling us the Timekeepers, but I'm thinking it might come from someone on the celestial or cosmic level, maybe someone like Kronos, who's the master of time. And Kronos is an interesting name to look at because he's related to Thanos. He's Thanos' grandfather. He's Alaris' father. He's also Zuras' father. And Zuras was Thena's father. Thena and Thanos are first cousins. And
it's such
we're about
a
to get this
thing.
Eternals movie where this whole family tree could get explored.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, we're definitely going to see that their family, the family tree of Thanos explored in the Eternals. And, like, we even got Alaris mentioned in Avengers Infinity War, not Endgame.
Absolutely.
So, like, they're definitely teasing that line. And so if we got a Lars in the MCU already, Kronos has got to be somewhere. So, yeah, I do like that Kronos connection there.
And one thing I've started to explore more and more, MT, is this idea that the Celestials may have been okay with what Thanos did or what he was trying to do to snap all of half of all life out of existence. We know that the Celestials had this history with the Infinity Stones. Esson or Essen, we were talking before the show, we don't know if it's Esson or Essen. But whoever that Celestial was in the Collector's story in Guardians of the Galaxy had the Power Stone. And Nebula said in Endgame that the Soul Stone was at the center of Celestial existence. And I think there's this connection there. They may have sent Thanos on this mission to do this. And that could, and maybe that's their gripe now with the Eternals, right? Is like the Eternals have been sponsoring the Avengers if they love Captain America so much. And Captain America and Iron Man, all their friends, are the ones who stopped Thanos' mission. And the TVA, notice they arrest Loki. They're more upset with like people screwing up with the timeline. Why didn't they arrest Thanos at any point, you know, for his stealing of the Time Stone? That must mean that according to the TVA, what Thanos did was the correct path, was the rightful future. So that tells us they are at least neutral, no opinion, or totally okay with what Thanos did because it was just what time was supposed to be. And now they're getting mad at people who meddled with that timeline. To them, that's a bigger violation than Thanos committing like a than Thanos committing genocide on a cosmic scale. So I just find it interesting that they could be linked to this higher power that would be okay with what Thanos did. And now the big conflict that the Avengers of Earth are facing, maybe the Eternals of Earth are facing, is going to be with groups like the TVA and other cosmic universal authorities who actually kind of wanted Thanos to carry that out.
I mean, yeah, like the common thread between the TVA and Thanos, like you were alluding to earlier, is that they sort of were acting like universal custodians in a way, you know? Because like, Thanos was trying to make sure that, like, all life in the universe could continue. And so the TVA wants to make sure that all time in the universe can continue. So, like, you know, the TVA could very much be down with what Thanos was doing, because what if this is not the first time that a Thanos-type figure has been running, you know, what do you call it? Running maintenance on the universe, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it could just be like, oh, man, like, Thanos is completely fine, you know, until, you know, I feel like the TVA would not be cool with Thanos until he destroyed all the stones, because now the stones are outside of the timeline. So,
yeah,
you know.
if we're comparing this all to the sci-fi of authors like Douglas Adams, right? Like in the 70s, when a lot of these comics were being written, like they were totally inspired by Hitchhiker's Guide and a lot of sci-fi like that. A common theme in that kind of, you know, sci-fi humor is that Earth is just a small part of the universe, and the interests of Earth is often completely in conflict with the interests of other larger bodies. And the way that, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide begins with Earth being paved paved away for interstellar superhighway. That's kind of like what the TVA probably sees as well. They don't care about the people of Earth. Galactus obviously doesn't care about the people of any one planet. He feeds off of planets, you know. Precisely. Silver Surfer is kind of co-opted into that. So what we're going to start to see as the MCU starts to go more cosmic, that's the front of the war that we're going to be fighting on, are the Avengers and people who are loyal to Earth fighting against these cosmic forces who are indifferent. And to me, I lump in the TVA with those cosmic forces.
Oh yeah, you gotta. I mean, like, in like, I love that type of perspective because we're human beings on Earth. We're just like, yeah, Earth is like the most important thing in the world, but like, it's just a small speck in a massive, massive universe. And like, we cannot, and like, the people of MCU Earth cannot comprehend the overall, you know, goals of these cosmic beings. So like, you know, we're sort of messing things up with like the events of Endgame and everything, and like, you know, messing with the Tesseract and like messing with all these Infinity Stones. So, you know, I'm sure the Celestials and the TVA cannot stand MCU Earth. It's like, what is going on here? Why are these people so weird?
So we're going to talk more about the TVA and about other big Marvel news. First, we want to thank some people who helped us make this episode. Starting with our friends at Credit Karma Money. We all like instant gratification. With Credit Karma Money, you could win cash reimbursements for debit purchases. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your instant karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million on instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members. Open your FDIC insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com to sign up for the free account and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking terms. Services provided by MVB Bank, Inc. Member FDIC, maximum balance and transfer limits apply. We also want to thank Mint Mobile for sponsoring this episode. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by big wireless providers, we've learned that there's always a catch. That's what sets Mint Mobile apart. They are noticeably catch-free. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. So by cutting out retail stores, there's no crazy overhead costs that get passed down to you in the form of mystery fees. Instead, Mint just passes on those sweet savings directly to you. Here at New Rockstars, Philip switched to Mint Mobile service. He's loved it. He uses his same phone and saves a bunch of money every month. He's stuffing all that saved money into his mattress and he says he's never slept better. Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for just $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and to get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/marvel. That's mintmobile.com/marvel. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/marvel. We also want to thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this episode. Our friends at Blue Chew have a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no doctor's office or pharmacy trips. It ships right to your door in a discreet package. You sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you receive your prescription within days. Their licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength. And Blue Chew is chewable, just like it says in the name, which is great news for folks that don't like swallowing pills. So, if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we've got a special deal for our audience. Try BlueChew free when you use the promo code InsideMarvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Marvel, to receive your first month free. And we thank BlueChew for sponsoring this show. All right, so back to Loki. There was this interesting line in the promo, MT, where Mobius and Mobius told Loki, like, you brought chaos to our timeline. Which is just interesting because the TVA is supposed to oversee all these different timelines. So what is this, what timeline are they attached to? Does that mean he is specifically attached to this timeline? Or is there like a prime timeline in the way that the Marvel Studios is doing it?
That's a good question. I think that there is like a prime timeline. And like the timeline that the main universe is set in is the main timeline. Like, and so the timeline that we're in Loki that he branches off to, he sort of makes his own timeline. And I think that from what we learn in Avengers Endgame with the Ancient One, I think that when, you know, a timeline gets branched off, that timeline's basically sort of doomed. because there aren't like all six Infinity Stones inside of that timeline. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if the TVA especially cares about if, you know, branch timelines sort of get all wrong, because like it's that main timeline they're trying to preserve. So like maybe that chaos on that, you know, purple planet is a timeline just going to shit because there isn't a all six Infinity Stones in it. But who knows?
I like that idea a lot. Or that maybe there are two Tesseracts in that, or two Space Stones in that universe, and it causes the rules of spatial relationships between planets and heavenly bodies to break down and fall apart, and moons crash into their surfaces of the planets they're being the satellite of. Like, and it's so weird in this promo footage that after Loki gets booked and he's in his detainee jumpsuit, you still see him holding that Tesseract, which, like, what does that mean? They don't want the Tesseract to be destroyed, or they don't want the Space Stone to be destroyed. Did they remove the Space Stone from the Tesseract? It's like, there's a lot of mystery of who built that Tesseract around the Space Stone.
Exactly.
Because the Tesseract was understood to be something different before, you know, people knew that there was an Infinity Stone in it.
Yeah, like, what is the purpose of the actual Tesseract container? Like, I've always wanted to learn, like, what is going on. And what is that that weird glow inside of the Tesseract box that surrounds the actual Space Infinity Stone? Like, what? These questions need to be answered, because, like, I need to know.
Yeah, can the Tesseract open portals without the Space Stone? I think the implication is no. Only the Space Stone can have those kind of Bifrost rules to them, you know?
Yeah, and like, you know, that's what the whole deal with Project Pegasus is. I think that, you know, a lot of that, you know, that weird goo inside of it, that weird like sludge or whatever it is inside of the Tesseract is dark energy. Like, because like that's what Project Pegasus is really messing around with. So, you know, we could learn it like, hey, this is a box that contains dark energy, which, you know, it kind of contains the power of the souls, the Space Stone. I don't know. But like, you know, Project Pegasus definitely saw the value in was trying to break down the Tesseract anyway.
I think so. It's early in MCU phase one. I think they called it the Tesseract, but it was really based on the Cosmic Cube, which was a different thing. And it wasn't until, what do we want to say, around Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it started with Thor the Dark World was the first one to introduce the idea of Infinity Stones, which even if you go back and rewatch that movie, clearly they brought in Anthony Hopkins in ADR after the fact to mention the idea of an Infinity Stone. And I think it's because they were working on Age of Ultron at that point. Like they started to write Age of Ultron while Thor the Dark World was in post-production. So I guess that somewhere in there, Kevin Feige was talking with Joss Whedon and they're like, let's start laying the seeds for this in some of these movies. And at that point, they made the Tesseract the container of the Space Stone.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on
your
podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Maybe that seems like a really rational, like logical way of how things could have gone. So,
but it was done. The point is, it was done after the fact. You know, like they didn't plan all this out ahead of time. It was kind of like, we'll just make as many Marvel movies as people will be willing to go see. And then once it was super popular, they're like, oh, let's kind of retcon some of this stuff to make it all connect.
See, like, that does make sense. But, like, I don't know, man. I just feel like Kevin Feige has really been, like, he's had, like, an idea of, like, all this stuff since, like, probably as early as, like, Avengers 1, maybe? Like,
I think
from what
he's
I
had,
tell.
I think he's had a broad vision. And the guy's been a genius. I'm not saying this to knock him at all.
Oh, yeah, it's just,
I don't think he's had a perfect vision of everything. Because otherwise, they wouldn't have made the stones the color they made them. They would have just matched it with the color from the comics. They wouldn't have put Thanos' gauntlet in Odin's vault. Because you could see them make these little jokes afterwards where Hell pitches it over saying fake.
This is true, yeah.
There are all these little details where, I mean, there was even like Mephisto in the paperwork that Nick Fury gave Cap in the first Avengers movie. So clearly Whedon and his prop team was like, oh, we're going to do the Infinity Gauntlet storyline with Mephisto, you know, who is at Thanos'
side. I think there's actually also like a sword reference within that Agent Carter one shot. When she opens up the drawer, it's like, it's sword to shield and all that stuff. I'm like, sword? Has it been around for that long? Wait, time out.
I think Selvig mentioned sword at the end of Thor. He's talking about shield and sword, I think. Or you have to listen closely, or it's maybe in the captions.
Okay. So, like, has sword really just been in the universe all this time and I just didn't know?
I think that's the idea of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Impossible. I know everything, Eric. I just don't know things. Just kidding. No, that's ridiculous. I totally understand. And like, I think I remember watching like or reading an interview or something with James Gunn saying that like they changed the color of the Power Stone mid production of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, it's gonna be red.
So, yeah. So like, you know, you're right. Like things sort of just like, you know, they're figuring things out on the way, sort of.
Right.
So,
yeah.
For sure.
Now let's talk about Eternals, right? Do you think Loki could cameo in Eternals? Because the Eternals had that that volcano eruption, and a lot of people were like, whoa, is that Mount Vesuvius that we saw in the background of the Loki footage? I'm not so sure about that, but what do you think, MT?
I think that it'd be a great way for, you know, to connect the Eternals to the broader MCU, and like, you know, they're going across time the long way and like Loki's popping through time. So like, I think that that's highly possible. You know, we might even see Eternals in Loki as like a little primer for what's to come, because like, that's what these Marvel shows sort of do. It's like, hey, you know, we're sort of like, you know, a nice little spice to the you know, the movie MCU. So yeah, I think that there's some crossover potential there, but what do you think? What you got?
Potential for sure. Here's the deal. I want Loki to cameo in everything. And part of me still thinks that that dude in the background who kind of looked like Tom Hiddleston in Avengers Endgame when they're in the 70s at Camp Lehigh, there's some dude sitting on a bench. And I know I pointed that in a video before, like, was that Loki in the 70s? Hanging out at Camp Lehigh watching him steal the Tesseract.
That'd be so great.
If they tie that back in, whoa, oh my God. That
wonderful.
Would be insane.
Masterpiece.
But yeah, I just think the shape of that volcano in the Eternals trailer just looks different than the shape of the volcano. We don't really know fully what Vesuvius looked like. That was 79 AD. But in the Loki footage, they used footage from Mount St. Helens, which had a kind of a flatter shape to it, whereas this is a bit more pointed. And I think it's more likely that that's some, you know, civilization the Eternals failed to protect or failed to save. And I'm hoping that ends up being Atlantis and the volcano erupts and it causes
the
landmass to break off and then sink into the ocean.
Oh my God. Something. Yeah. Like that'd be like a really great way to like tease Namor, because like we're going to get Namor very soon. He's got to come.
I hope so.
And like they got to cast, what's his name? Glenn from The Walking Dead. Steven Yeun.
Yeun would be great.
Steven Yeun.
He'd be great. That guy needs to get in the MCU. Cast him.
Oh, for sure. He's going to be in the MCU eventually. Like he's just he's too great of an actor.
He's amazing. And a really nice guy. He used to perform at the Improv Theater. I used to perform at. He'd always have a huge, huge crowd. It would be fun because he would play in one of the back theaters. He could play on any stage he wanted, but he just had a friend who hosted a show in one of the back theaters. And those were the tiny stages me and my indie teams would put up shows. And it would be like, normally you have like 12 people in the audience. It's just you and the other teams that are performing just watching you. That's it.
Yeah.
But there'd be one I had like a 10:30 show. And then I would see like 50 people come out of the theater from the show before, and I'd be like, what the hell is going on? And these are people you'd never see at the theater before, all younger folks.
Yeah.
And then the last one to come out would be, oh, Steven Yeun. Okay. That's why there are 50 people crammed in there. Because he just tweeted him doing the show.
It's just it's that Yoon magnetism. It's like they just come to him, you know?
Yeah. Now, actually, I should read this quote exactly from Mike Waldron. He did an interview, I think it was with Total Film, and he said, quote, "All of these stories in their own way are interconnected and have ramifications. I think that certainly our aim with the Loki series was for it to have wide-reaching ramifications across the MCU moving forward. So, you know, was I having to clean up some of the messes that I made with Loki? Maybe so." So, yeah, there you go. I think that's a... if he said he was just trying to tell his own story, as most of these other people do, like when he asked the showrunners of WandaVision, Falcon, Winter Soldier, he's saying, no, I want to connect to as many things as I possibly can, which gets me really excited for this show, which our next question kind of addresses that.
Okay, so our next What the Clock of the Day is, in this trailer, Loki says a bit of both, something that Wanda chirps in episode 3 of WandaVision, of course. So could Loki join Wanda in spreading chaos in the multiverse of madness, Eric?
Yeah, I hope so, right? Like, that seems like the perfect place for Loki to pop up. I mean, both titles, Loki and Multiverse of Madness, are dealing with, like, the fragility of reality.
Right.
And how you screw with the rules of the universe, chaos is going to come from that. And this term chaos coming up in this trailer, it seems synonymous with Multiverse of Madness, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, you know, Loki is... a god of chaos. He's not the god of chaos, but, like, he's a god of mischief. And so, like, you know, it'd be a great way to, you know, like, sort of connect that the chaos, that, like, you know, concept that Loki is sort of introducing to these different realities to Multiverse of Madness. Like, there is definitely some type of connection there. But, like, I don't know if Loki will end up connecting to Multiverse of Madness directly, because, like, I think that there may be a difference between timelines, branch timelines, and, like, actual different universes.
Different realities.
Because I think that, you know, one universe can have a zillion different timelines, and, like, each universe might have their own TVA. I don't know. But, like, I just think that, you know, all of the timelines that we're going to see in Loki are contained into the one Marvel, the MCU that we know. So I don't know, but there is a definite connection there with chaos for sure.
Right. And I'm with you. I'm not certain this means Loki. Obviously both them saying a bit of both doesn't mean that he's got a cameo in
I mean, Star-Lord said that too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. A lot of people say that. I think just the nature of the characters do lead themselves to be in similar kind of stories for sure. I would say that when it comes to the way Marvel Studios is structuring their multiverse, the fact that Endgame was all about time and timelines leads me to think that timelines are going to be the way they distinguish one reality from the other.
Yeah.
And that's only because that they could have done anything to do the logic of Endgame. They didn't have to make it a time travel movie. They could have used magic of branch realities. And I'm just going to an alternate reality and we're pulling it from there. They could have, you know, they didn't have to make it a something that had to teach us something about quantum mechanics and the EPR paradox and stuff. That was a choice. And I think that was deliberate by Kevin Feige. He told the writers of that movie, I want time travel to be part of this. I want timelines to be an element of this movie. And they're like, okay, all right, cool. And the reason we bring up Endgame so much is it's not only the most profitable movie, like, ever for Marvel. It's the fact that, like, Marvel is obsessed with Endgame. Marvel referenced Endgame in both of their titles since then. It's all about the events of that movie were so game-changing. Every Marvel title since then has been kind of obsessed with it. I assume Black Widow won't be, but it seems like everything else will be. So, yeah, I think since that movie's about timelines, I think the MCU going forward will be kind of about timelines.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're totally right. That's the first movie that really introduced the concept of, you know, branching timelines and all that stuff. Yeah. So, like, you know, yeah, I definitely... for sure. And Marvel Studios definitely sees the value in Endgame and will keep referencing Endgame and, like, the ramifications of Endgame moving forward. I mean, we got a whole movie called Quantumania coming out.
Yeah,
and, like,
exactly.
That is hardcore leaning on Endgame. So
yeah, for sure.
Just great.
Well, speaking of the Maximoff family, let's talk about Aaron Taylor Johnson being cast as Kraven the Hunter by Sony. And this is going to be a solo film. They announced that it would be a solo film last year, I believe. It's kind of like what they're doing with Morbius Living Vampire, with Venom and Venom Let There Be Carnage. It seems like these are all other Spider-Man villain movies where the villain is kind of the anti-hero of the story and Spider-Man won't be in it. And it looks like it'll be based on the storyline of Kraven's Last Hunt, which is an amazing comic event that I highly recommend you check out. Really, really delves into the character of Kraven as this kind of tragic figure. Very cool. What are your thoughts on this, MT?
I think that this is a huge piece of news because, like, I think that this is part of, like, something that I've been thinking about ever since WandaVision, and it's something called the Boner Effect. Named after Ralph Boner. And, you know, because people are like, oh my God, why isn't Evan Peters playing Quicksilver? Like, that was the big question. And I think that every universe has the same faces, like the same actor faces, but sometimes they're in different roles. And so when I heard that Aaron Taylor Johnson is going to be Kraven the Hunter, I was like, oh my God, this makes sense because the face, this is the face of Pietro or, you know, for, I should say, Aaron Taylor Johnson in another universe being portrayed as Kraven. So, like, this makes me feel that, you know, we're going to see this Kraven within whatever Spider-Verse type Sinister Six is going on because, you know, he probably has his own, you know, dealings with maybe a different version of Spider-Man. Like, what if there's, like, a Spider-Man that's literally, like, insane and is, like, murdering people or whatever? It's like, I have to hunt this guy. You know, he's my biggest prey. And so, like, whenever, you know, whoever comes to pick Kraven up to be part of the Sinister Six is like, well, in my universe, Spider-Man's insane. So, like, yeah, I'll join you guys, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I just this is like the beginnings of, like, multiverse shenanigans. And, like, it's going to be great. But how do you feel about this?
I'm okay with it. I don't really have an opinion either way. I think a couple different camps of people were annoyed with this news. You have the group of folks who wanted Kraven to be played by someone else like Jason Momoa or something like that. But whenever I hear that, it annoys me whenever people are cast in roles and then everyone on Twitter becomes a casting director. it's like, why don't you just trust actors to act? You know, like, it's the same thing with Heath Ledger. When Heath Ledger was announced for Dark Knight, everyone was like, oh, pretty boy Heath Ledger. It's like, trust him to be an actor. Like, you can...
Exactly.
Actors' jobs are to emulate and to change their bodies, to change their voices, to change their mannerisms, to convey something. So suspend your disbelief. Don't just attach a face to a character forever. But the other side of this is, I think people are also kind of weirded out by Sony taking a well-known superhero face from the MCU. But I think that also tells us that Marvel did not have plans to bring back Aaron Taylor Johnson as Pietro. So for those people who thought that the reason they made Evan Peters just Ralph Boner and not the Fox version of Quicksilver is because they had plans to bring back Aaron Taylor Johnson, it sounds like neither of those are Marvel's plan. And the question then becomes, well, then what is Marvel's plan? Because we should have some version of Quicksilver in the MCU. The version we should have, the reason we should have every Marvel hero in some form in the MCU. I think eventually we're looking ahead at a multiverse reset. I think sometime in the next 3 or 4 years, there's just going to be some event because all these actors' contracts are going to run out. You know, Chris Hemsworth isn't going to be the only person playing Thor forever. And you're going to start seeing all these roles recast. 100%. And that way we'll have everyone be able to come back. Any character that might have been killed off, you know, you can bring back other new people and recast whoever you want. And I think that's going to be their plan with all the X-Men, with Quicksilver, with Wolverine.
For sure. I feel like the X-Men, you know, the proper MCU X-Men, whenever they show up, they're going to be new iterations. But I do feel like we are going to get, you know, like you said, like a, some type of event, like maybe a Secret Wars or something where we see, you know, our favorite Quicksilver from the Fox universe, where we see, you know, maybe the Fantastic Four with Chris Evans making an appearance as part of the Boner Effect.
See, I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think they're going to bring in Hugh Jackman. I don't think they're going to bring in Ian McKellen. The fact they brought in Evan Peters, I don't think they brought... I think once Evan Peters was revealed as Ralph Boner, that kind of put the nail in the coffin to those theories. Because other than Ryan Reynolds coming over as Deadpool, what other actors is Marvel interested in bringing back, and those actors are also interested in coming back? Hugh Jackman's done. I don't think he wants to play Wolverine.
Well, like, I don't think that, you know, if they do, like, bring in, like, past actors, I don't think it's going to be for the long haul. I think it's probably going to be for, like, this celebratory, like, this is Marvel, like, Secret Wars type movie where it's like, this is one contained event, and then, you know, they're gone forever, and now we're moving forward.
See,
like,
I don't even think they're going to do that, because really? That one event is going to be huge, and I think they'd be worried, rightfully so, that it would confuse fans' minds. That so then who is Wolverine in this universe? I've paid money to see this guy right now as Wolverine, so it's going to make it more confusing if in the next movie they're like, just kidding, here's our Wolverine. I think Marvel's going to invest its money in whatever their new people are. Also, this is a financial consideration. Those actors, even for a cameo, is going to be expensive as hell.
It's true.
You could save so much more money by just casting actors who have not been in a ton of stuff but are still super talented and giving them a chance to play these roles. I think that's going to be their way forward. I don't think they're gonna dust off, you know, Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen.
Oh man, I really feel like a Secret Wars type deal is coming. We're like,
and I agree. I think a Secret Wars type deal is coming too, but it's going to be with new actors playing these characters. I don't think it's going to be with the old actors. It's just not how Hollywood works.
Okay, I mean, like. That's very logical, though. That's very logical. So, like, that's probably, you know, a very likely route that they'll take. But, like, man, I just feel like there's a lot of money to be made within this huge multiverse clash thing. But I don't know.
I mean, it's totally the same way, like, I mean, they're not recasting Wesley Snipes as Blade. They're bringing in Mahershala Ali. There are bigger names right now you can get to play these roles.
Bigger than Wesley Snipes, impossible.
Just as much. You know, I think if you try to get, you know, whoever your dream cast is from the past installments, getting Chris Evans to play, they'd rather have Chris Evans play Captain America in some other form. They're not going to get him to play Johnny Storm. They're going to want their new Johnny Storm. Whoever it is.
This is true.
But I mean, that's just my thinking on it. Whatever. I've been wrong before with how.
Oh no! Like it's very logical. I mean, I'm just thinking like with my like you know bright eyes. I'm like, oh my gosh, it'd be great to see everybody that I love again. But like, you know.
Me too. I mean, I'd love to see Hugh Jackman come back. I just don't think it's gonna happen. But I do think that one thing when it comes to this Aaron Taylor Johnson news. Sony's got to figure out their version of a live-action Spider-Man, and I don't think they can either. It's a contractual thing or a financial thing. They can't get Tom Holland in there to play Peter Parker in the movie because then it becomes a Spider-Man movie. But it doesn't make sense for all these characters to just be in their own worlds without Spider-Man in it because all of their existence are directly tied to Spider-Man. It was weird in the first Venom movie to have this Venom story without Spider-Man in it. I think it's going to be weird in Venom Let There Be Carnage. I think it's going to be super weird in Morbius, and it seems like they're kind of walking this line of having, like, Spider-Man sightings, but Peter Parker's not going to be in it. So, like, bring in Miles Morales. Like, do something to have a Spider-Man in the story. And, you know, like, I like your idea, MT, of having the Spider-Man be the villain of that universe, you know?
That'd be dope.
But I think audiences are going to reject it after a while of, like, why am I watching this story?
I mean, yeah, but, like, something that just popped into my brain when you were talking is that, like, what if the reason why there are no Spider-Mans in, you know, Venom's universe or, like, potentially, you know, Kraven's universe is that Morlun and the Inheritors are killed them before, like, you know, their stories even began. Like, what if, like, this is part of the Spider-Verse narrative? It's like there is no Spider-Man because he's dead. Like, he was eaten.
So, like, I want that. I would love that.
That would be a great way.
That's the reason behind it. I think the hard part, I think, for a lot of fans is we love the version of Spider-Man that we have right now with Tom Holland.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Tom Holland's not going to be playing this part forever, but let's be honest, the reason they have this sharing deal with Marvel is because Kevin Feige's guidance in it has been a big reason why this character's successful. The fact that Spider-Man could show up in Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame, like, it's this sense of a promise that just around the corner from him are the Avengers. And the Avengers are connected with this story. I think you need that. I think you need, for him to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, he needs to be part of a friendly neighborhood. Right. And if Sony can't deliver that, then I think a lot of fans aren't excited about a future where only Sony is doing Spider-Man stories. Like, but at the end of the day, is Sony ever going to sell the rights to these Marvel characters back to Disney? Sony would have to be in dire financial straits to do that. And right now they have plenty of ways to make money aside from Hollywood. They can buffer a bad year of movie releases with selling more PlayStations.
To who? I ain't got one. It's so hard to get a PS5, dude. It's right, so yeah. annoying. God. But like, yeah, no, for sure. Like, I feel like Sony's not really willing to sell Spider-Man because he's a cash cow in more than
one
way.
He makes them so much money. Even the profit share that they get with Disney, because Disney's taking a bigger chunk of it, Sony still can bankroll all their other investments in terms of film production budgets with just the money they make from these Spider-Man movies. Even Venom, without Spider-Man in it, made a shit ton of money for them.
Yeah, like those Spider-Man related characters, like Spider-Man's like whole like story since like he started, there's so many interesting characters in his universe that like Sony, you know, struggles with making individual properties for outside of the Marvel universe, in my opinion anyway. So you know, it's just really frustrating, but hey, whatever.
We'll take what we get. Hey, I'm excited for Aaron Taylor Johnson. I think the guy's a great actor. I think he's going to act the hell out of
this. This is great casting. This is fantastic casting.
He's
going to
be really good in this role.
He's going to kick ass. It's going to be
so fun. Definitely makes me more excited for this movie than I was before. Because Aaron Taylor Johnson's great. And I'm excited to see what Marvel eventually does for the X-Men and Quicksilver. I think they're looking forward, not looking to the past. And maybe that's for the best. Let us know your comments down below. I'm sure you will either way. It's okay to disagree with us. Just try to be respectful to each other.
Be nice, everybody. It's okay to disagree. Just be like, hey guys, this is why I don't agree. That's okay.
Neither of us are saying the studios have to do one thing or another. We don't own these characters, right?
Yet. So
one day MTR are gonna get our own studios. We'll run it.
We're starting the GoFundMe.
Yeah, but in the meantime, we're not going to gatekeep and say that the studios have to do one thing over another, right? That's not our style.
It's not what we do here.
But thank you for joining us for this episode of Inside Marvel. We'll be back next Friday for one more Friday episode of Inside Marvel. But then after that, we're moving to Wednesdays.
It's Wednesdays,
our Loki after shows. It's going to be fun. So follow MT at Mastertainment, follow me at EA Voss, follow New Rockstars, and subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to New Rockstars here on YouTube. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye.